Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, chapter 9, the passing way of Bhishma Dev, text 46. Tasya Niharanadini Sampadetasya Bhagava Yudhisthira Kayayatra Mahurtam Dukito Bhavat Tasya Niharanadini Sampadetasya Bhagava Yudhisthira Kayayatra Mahurtam Dukito Bhavat Tasya Niharanadini Sampadetasya Bhagava Yudhisthira Kayayatra Mahurtam Dukito Bhavat Tasya
is
Niharana Adini
funeral ceremony
Sampadetasya
of the dead body
Bhagava
O
descendant of Bhrigu
Yudhishthira
Maharaj Yudhishthira
Karayita
having performed it
Mahurtam
for a moment
Dukita.
Sorry.
Abhavat.
Became.
Behind.
Translation. O descendant of Bhrigu, Shaunaka. After performing funeral rituals for the dead body of Bhishmadev, Maharaj Yudhisthira was momentarily overtaken with grief. Purport. Bhishmadev was not only a great family head of Maharaj Yudhisthira, but he was also a great philosopher and friend to him, his brothers, and his mother. Since Maharaj Pandu, the father of the five brothers headed by Maharaj Yudhisthira, had died, Bhishmadev was the most affectionate grandfather of the Pandavas and caretaker of the widow daughter-in-law, Kunti Devi. Although Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the elder uncle of Maharaj Yudhisthira, was there to look after them, his affection was more on the side of his 100 sons headed by Duryodhana. Ultimately, a colossal clique was fabricated to deprive the five fatherless brothers of the rightful claim of the kingdom of Hastinapur. There was great intrigue, common in imperial palaces, and the five brothers were exiled to the wilderness. But Bhishmadev was always a sincere, sympathetic well-wisher, grandfather, friend, and philosopher to Maharaj Yudhisthira, even up to the last moment of his life. He died very happily by seeing Maharaj Yudhisthira to the throne. Otherwise, he would have long ago quitted his material body instead of suffering agony over the undue sufferings of the Pandavas. He was simply waiting for the opportune moment because he was sure and certain that the sons of Pandu would come out victorious in the battlefield of Kurukshetra, as his lordship Sri Krishna was their protector. As a devotee of the Lord, he knew that the Lord's devotee cannot be vanquished at any time. Maharaj Yudhisthira was quite aware of these good wishes of Bhishmadev, and therefore he must have been feeling the great separation. He was sorry for the separation of a great soul, and not for the material body which Bhishmadev relinquished. The funeral ceremony was a necessary duty, although Bhishmadev was a liberated soul. Since Bhishmadev was without issue, the eldest grandson, namely Maharaj Yudhisthira, was the rightful person to perform the ceremony. It was a great boon to Bhishmadev that an equally great son of the family undertook the last rites of a great man. Om Agyanatyanam Nityanagyanatyanam Shakya Chakshu Nityanam Nityanatasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Probably you'll ask the question, why Bhishmadev, if he felt like this for the Pandavas and their mother, why he was fighting against them? You heard, briefly, the story of the beginning of the Battle of Kurukshetra, how the Pandava's father died at a young age, for them, their young age, and left their mother, Kunti Devi, without a husband. And so the boys were looked after by Pandu's brother, who was Dhritarashtra. And as you know, Dhritarashtra had very bad motives. He had 100 sons of his own, and he was always thinking how they could get all the benefit, even at the expense of the Pandavas, his nephews, his own nephews. In fact, the Pandava boys were subject to be they tried Dhritarashtra and his sons directly and indirectly tried to arrange their death, their misfortune. Bhishma Dev fought on the side of the Kauravas. He fought on the side of Duryodhana and Dhritarashtra. Why is that if he felt so much affection and love for the Pandavas and Kunti Devi? He was their well-wishing grandfather. Why did he fight on the other side? This was Krishna's arrangement. Krishna wanted to show that even a great soul like Bhishma Dev cannot win if he's on the wrong side. Bhishma Dev was not simply a liberated soul. He was the greatest warrior, the greatest general. Therefore, you'll read in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita how confident Duryodhana was. I've got Bhishma Dev, the general, on my side. Who do the Pandavas have on their side? No one who can compare. They have Bhima. Bhima's got a lot of strength, but he's got no brain. That's how Duryodhana was calculating. I've got Bhishma Dev, the greatest warrior, the greatest strategist, the greatest general. Who can stop us? From the material point of view, Duryodhana was correct. This you have to understand when you start to read Bhagavad Gita. Duryodhana was correct in analyzing his chances of victory. Materially, his side was superior. Yet, what happened when he looked over on the other side? He was a bit surprised and astonished at the brilliance of the Pandavas' phalanxes, military formations. Of course, Krishna was on the side of the Pandavas, although he had promised not to fight. So, Bhishma Dev was on the wrong side because Krishna wanted to show that even the greatest warrior on the wrong side, what is the use? Also, there's an internal reason that Bhishma Dev longed to engage in chivalrous battle with the Lord. So Krishna wanted to give him that chance. Bhishma Dev was attracted to Krishna as Partha Sarathi, the chariot driver of Arjuna. So Bhishma Dev had the opportunity to give great pleasure to the Lord by filling the Lord with arrows. This is how Krishna is a supreme enjoyer. Krishna not only enjoys the kisses of his fiancées, the queens at Dwarka or the gopis in Vrindavan, Krishna also enjoys the arrows shot at him by Bhishma Dev. Now how can you compete with that kind of enjoyment? Krishna felt the arrows of Bhishma Dev to be as sweet as the kisses of his fiancées. Bhishma Dev gave great pleasure to the Lord by fighting with him. He had said, Arjuna will die. He had 5 arrows made, one for each Pandava. And he had promised, they'll die before the day is over. Krishna broke his promise not to engage in the fighting. And when Krishna saw that Arjuna was about to be vanquished by Bhishma Dev, Krishna grabbed a broken chariot wheel and ran towards Bhishma to finish him. And Bhishma was filling the body of the Lord with arrows. And then Bhishma Dev just surrendered. Oh, okay, Krishna, you've given me what I want. You've given me a fight. Who can understand these loving exchanges, these rasas, transcendental relationships? Yudhisthira naturally is feeling great grief upon the departure of Bhishma Dev, because Bhishma Dev gave him great protection, great counsel, and also great instruction. Bhishma Dev was a great philosopher, and in fact, as hopefully you know, Bhishma Dev was one of the 12 authorities in devotional service. He sets the standard for what bhakti is. Sampradetasya, of the dead body. What is the difference between a living body and a dead body? That is explained very clearly by Krishna in Bhagavad Gita. Avinashi tu tad vidi, yena sarvam idam jatam. You should know that that which pervades the body is indestructible. No one is able to destroy the soul. What is that indestructible thing that pervades the body? So easy to understand. That for Prabhupada gives such a simple example because it's easy to understand. You pinch yourself, and what do you feel? You feel consciousness. In other words, because of the consciousness, you're aware that you're being pinched. So what is that that pervades the body that allows you to be aware? That is consciousness, and that consciousness is indestructible. It is not slain when the body is slain. So all you have to do is pinch yourself. And then you understand, I'm conscious. That consciousness is indestructible. And what else does that consciousness do? It changes from one body to another. So when you pinch yourself and you feel the pinching, that's because you are conscious. And that consciousness that you possess goes from one body to another. It is not slain when the body is slain. Nahanyate hanyamane shiryare. Now there are two kinds of consciousness. There is the individual consciousness and the supreme consciousness. We cannot be super conscious like Krishna. What is a simple example Prabhupada gave again and again? I am aware of the pains and pleasures of this body, but not of your body. And vice versa. You're not aware directly of the pains and pleasures of my body. But Krishna, as the super consciousness, as the super soul, is aware of the pains and pleasures in all bodies. So that is the difference between the minute consciousness and the infinite consciousness. And we can never become infinitely conscious on our own. Sometimes people ask a question. How? For example, when we perform devotional service, is the spiritual master aware of everything we do? Prabhupada's answer was quite direct, that perhaps not directly, but Krishna is aware, and through Krishna, the spiritual master is aware. Looked at another way, as Prabhupada explains in the fourth canto, Krishna empowers the spiritual master to know whatever is necessary to know to guide the disciple back to Godhead. No one is omniscient except Krishna. But Krishna gives his servitors enough knowledge, what they need to know, to get the job done. But if you are looking for omniscience, all-knowing, then that is only Krishna. But by trying to serve Krishna, we have access to all the intelligence that is necessary in order to get the job done. That is Krishna consciousness. We want to convince Krishna we are serious about our service, so please give us all necessary information and understanding. Isn't that what the Lord explains in Bhagavad Gita? Tesham satyuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadhami bhuti yogam tam yena mam upayantite. To those who are constantly devoted and worship me with love. Preeti. Preeti means affection. If their service is characterized by affection, then what do? How do I reciprocate? Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam. I personally give the intelligence how they can serve me better and go back to Godhead. How do you perform devotional service with affection? That means we take great pains to serve Krishna. We are very determined. We don't get discouraged as soon as there's some obstacle. We do all this necessary to keep ourselves in shape for devotional service. That means we want to eat properly for Krishna's service. Not too much, not too little. We want to sleep properly for Krishna's service. Not too much, not too little. We're always keeping ourselves in... we're molding our life so that we can render the best kind of devotional service to Krishna. That shows affection. Otherwise, why would we care? If you care about what you're doing, if you care about giving pleasure to Krishna, then you take care of yourself so that you can render the best service. That shows affection. What else shows affection? Tolerance. As I'm sure you all are finding out, even the new devotees, you cannot render devotional service without being tolerant. It's like here you are. So many persons, actually not so many, living in a bus. Oh. It can seem to be austere to some. And then you're going out every day, approaching people with Krishna conscious information. And they don't want so many of them. They don't care, so many of them. And you have to tolerate inconveniences in trying to teach them. That is the beginning of affection for Krishna. Sometimes we forget the importance of tolerance. We have been trained by a Western society how to become so sensitive to every little pinprick, every little pain to our physical body and subtle body we get so upset about. So what does modern society do? They're so busy racing this way and that way, trying to counteract little inconveniences. When it's too hot, they race to turn on a fan, turn on an air conditioner. When it's too cold, they race to turn on a heater. Of course, we're not saying never try to be comfortable. You can do your best, but you should understand that your goal of life is not to become busy simply trying to counteract miseries, because this world is misery. Why don't you figure out how to counteract the whole material world? Then you have a brain. But simply to race here and there all day and all night trying to counteract miseries, you'll waste your human form of life. One day it'll be too hot, next day too cold. One day it'll be just pleasant, but the mosquitoes will bother you. Just like on the South Island. In the summertime, the sandflies come. And not too many around here, but especially you go on the West Coast, so many sandflies. And on Pio's farm, you're going to find a few sandflies. So everything will be so nice. The weather will be perfect. It'll be so calm. But the sandflies, they'll be biting you like anything. So if it's not this, it's that. It's not that, it's this. That's the way this world is. If your body is healthy, then something's agitating your mind. If your mind is peaceful, then something's bothering your body. You establish a peaceful relationship with this Prabhu, and then another Prabhu gets on your nerves. You establish a peaceful relationship with that Prabhu, and the one you had peace with before gets on your nerves. On it goes. Devotional service is a great teacher that we are not the enjoyer. We are not the center. This is our problem. We are so used to being the center of existence, we think. And we're so hesitant to undergo a little bit of inconvenience for Krishna's sake. We've been so pampered. Pampered in that we've been trained to simply consider what's the best for my senses. We can't tolerate any discomfort, any inconvenience. That's why this service of book distribution is such a wonderful teacher. It trains you how to focus on Krishna's interests. And all our life we've been trained simply to consider our own selfishness, which is such an abominable life. We should understand what the important thing is. Avinashi tatad vidhi. That which pervades the body, that is consciousness. Why don't we learn how to purify our consciousness so we don't get another material body? That's the real solution. What is the real inconvenience in this world? The real inconvenience is that you have to take a body. Now, do something about that. Not spend your whole life racing this way, that way, trying to counteract this disturbance, that disturbance, make everything just right, so nice. Now, the real problem is you have a material body. Now, what are you going to do about that? That body, that is the source of all inconveniences. Also, that you are in the material world, that is the source of all inconveniences. You're in the wrong atmosphere. Now, what are you going to do about that? How do you stop getting another body? How do you get out of the material atmosphere? That is the real convenience. And this whole Krishna consciousness process is focused on how not to get another body, how to get out of the material atmosphere. Bhishmadeva, of course, his body is not ordinary. Nevertheless, even though he's a liberated soul, still there are proper ceremonies to be performed upon his departure, and Yudhisthira was doing that. And it's described that Yudhisthira was momentarily overtaken with grief. Not for the body of Bhishmadeva, but because Yudhisthira was going to miss his association. A devotee always feels separation from the great devotees. So many of us were feeling great separation from Srila Prabhupada. But the fact is, physical association is good. The main association comes through the instruction. Prabhupada once said that physical association with the spiritual master, that is for beginners. Of course, we all want to recognize that we are beginners, whether we are or not. We want to humbly feel that way. No one wants to feel, oh, I am so great, I am so advanced. It is a fact, especially in the beginning years of Krishna consciousness, one requires physical guidance. Because it's hard for us to understand the difference between material activities, spiritual activities. It's hard for us to understand the need for austerity, the voluntary acceptance of inconvenience. These things are hard for us to understand. We need guidance. And in Kali Yuga, there are so many pitfalls, so much debris in the air. It's like Toka and I were discussing. So much debris in the air. Just to keep your footing. You need a strong hand, a firm grip, to cross all these dangerous streams and rivers. So it is a fact that physical guidance is required. And then, when one becomes more mature, one realizes that you can associate with Krishna's representative through the mission. So Yudhisthira had received instruction from Bhishmadeva, and certainly he took those instructions as his life and soul. That was the main thing. And you can read these instructions in this chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam. Bhishmadeva gave instructions to Yudhisthira how to rule, how to lead a God-conscious empire. People think, how can one person rule the whole world? They think like that because these days one person can't even rule a town. One person can't even rule his family. So they think, this must be mythology. How could Yudhisthira be the emperor of the whole world? But by following Krishna's instructions, it is possible. Krishna is the super soul in everyone's heart. Krishna knows what's best for everyone. Therefore, by following Krishna's instructions, you can do the best thing for everyone in all circumstances. It is based on that understanding that Yudhisthira, Prichit, others, they rule the world. But based on your mental concoction and speculation and empirical research, you can't figure out what's the best thing for everybody. Not possible. But if you take your information from Krishna, the source of all energies, the cause of all causes, the original father of all living entities, then you can know what is best for everyone and how to manage the whole world. So Bhishmadeva trained Yudhisthira like that, particularly how society should be divided into the four varnas and four ashramas. You'll read in the fifth canto how Lord Rishabdeva, incarnation of Godhead, he also trained his sons in that way before handing over the kingdom to them, particularly to Bharat. Rishabdeva gave instruction how the people should be trained. And if you know anything about Ram Leela, you may know that after Lord Ramchandra came back from exile in the forest, as soon as he came back from the exile, Bharat, who was ruling on his behalf, immediately wanted to hand the kingdom back to Lord Ram. But before accepting the kingdom, Lord Ram went around the whole kingdom checking to make sure the citizens were following Varna and Ashrama. Otherwise, he wasn't going to do it. In other words, there must be qualification on both sides. The king, the emperor, government leader, as well as the citizens. So Ramchandra first went and analyzed the situation. Are they following Krishna's instructions? Are these people in this land following Varnashram Dharma? If not, I'm not going to do it. But when he saw that they were indeed, then he accepted. It is impossible to have peace in this world without leaders who understand what are the proper principles of ruling, of governing. And they cannot speculate these principles. They cannot invent them. They are revealed. Just as the energy is coming from Krishna, whether it's heat, light, whatever. Similarly, the instructions are also emanating from Krishna. When the Bhagavatam says, Janmadhyasittaha, the absolute truth is that from which everything is emanating. That also means instruction. Along with the energy comes instruction, how to use the energy. Sometimes people say, oh, words, words, words. All you guys do is talk words. How can words be spiritual? How can words take you to the supreme destination? They're just words. But what better use can words have than to be used by Krishna to take people back to Godhead? Why do you have this complex about words, that as if Krishna can't use words? Words are energy. Krishna can appear in any energy he likes. He can appear as the deity. Krishna can appear as words. And what better purpose can you find for words than to convey information, how to go back to Godhead? So Krishna uses words. Krishna, he is talks about him. He is fully present and talks about him. But if you want to be like an owl, a bird, they have owls in New Zealand?
Mopooks.
Mopooks. You want to be a mopook. Settling in the South Island or North Island too?
Might be South Island.
So if you want to be a mopook and hide your eyes from the sun, is that what mopooks do?
Yeah, and not like
else. As soon as the sun comes up, they close their eyes. Yeah. So if you want to be a mopook and close your eyes when the sun's shining, oh, words, words, words. Who needs them? Like sunlight, sunlight. Who needs it? Then that is your own fault. We want to take advantage of the words emanating from Krishna. Yudhisthira Maharaj certainly took that advantage. He heard from Bhishma Dev. Also, Krishna wanted to demonstrate to everyone the glories of his great devotee, Bhishma Dev. How, although Bhishma Dev was shot full of arrows, still he was able to give transcendental knowledge. So many souls, great sages and rishis from all over the universe, came to gather around Bhishma Dev's departure site. These are the important things that happen in the universe. The comings and goings of the great souls, the distribution of knowledge about Krishna. We simply have to change our priorities and vision to understand this. To understand Krishna takes a little bit of austerity. We have to desire to control our senses. And we should take up service to Krishna with an attitude that, although I may be undergoing some inconveniences, I want to please Krishna. We all know how to please ourselves, and we'll go through inconvenience to please ourselves. Take that same selfishness and apply it to the Supreme Self, and then we make Krishna conscious advancement. But we have to be a little bit tolerant. You cannot make spiritual advancement without tolerance. Nowhere in Bhagavad Gita do you find Krishna telling Arjuna, I have a magic pill that I'm going to give you, and you won't have to tolerate anything. You don't find that verse anywhere. Have you seen that verse? Clayton, have you seen that verse somewhere?
No.
What does Krishna say? Matra sparshasti kaunteya shitoshna shukadukada. Arjuna, these feelings of happiness and distress come and go like the seasons. You just tolerate. In other words, Krishna had already explained to Arjuna how we're not the body. Therefore, there's no need to grieve for the death of any creature. But Arjuna might say, Krishna, I hear what you're saying, and theoretically I accept. But still, when I think of how my friends and relatives on the other side are going to die, I still feel this attachment. I still feel this sadness. So therefore, Krishna said, that's all right, even if you feel that way, although you know better theoretically, even if you feel that way, you just tolerate. So we should not be afraid of learning how to tolerate in Krishna consciousness. Tolerate bodily inconveniences, tolerate mental inconveniences. This world is no place for comfortable living. This world is a chance for us to make a solution, how to get out of the material atmosphere. And you'll never be able to get out of the material atmosphere without cultivating some tolerance. Not that we flip out every time things don't go our way, things aren't happening to our liking. That's the nature of this world. There's always something that's going to rub you the wrong way. Haven't you noticed? But if we can go on with our duty to please Krishna in spite of all these inconveniences, that is the beginning of affection, preeti. And then Krishna says, I'll give you the intelligence how to go back to me. So we don't just want to be little softies. Thin-skinned softies. No, we want to be a little tough for Krishna. What does it mean to be tough? Not that we stick our chests out and grow lots of hair on our chest. No, to be tough for Krishna means that because we have a job to do, we'll tolerate inconveniences that come along the way in trying to do that job. That's what Krishna asked of Arjuna in Bhagavad Gita, and similarly, we're being asked the same thing. Tolerate these things and make an ultimate solution. We don't want to be namby-pambies. We don't want to be, little weaklings. We want to sacrifice for Krishna. Because everything belongs to Krishna, and we also belong to Krishna. Bhishmadev has sacrificed. Yudhisthira is sacrificing. Everyone gets a chance to sacrifice for Krishna. Let us remember once again, Avinashi Chitadvidhi, that which pervades the body is consciousness and it's indestructible. Understand what it means that you are conscious. That means you are spirit soul. And this consciousness that you're aware of, it's not finished when the body is finished. It goes from one body to another. Therefore, arrange your life so that you can realize and act as spirit soul. This is the whole lesson of Bhagavad Gita. And how do you act as spirit soul? By serving the Supreme Soul. Learn the art of using your senses for Krishna's pleasure. And become serious about that art. We are learning the art, science, and culture and philosophy of devotional service. That means how to use your senses for Krishna's pleasure. Just like Bhishmadev has departed, we will also depart. But we want our departure to be from a life that has been used to serve Krishna with intelligence.
Test that one cannot pass.
Just like Bali Maharaj in the 8th canto, such a severe test he had. He was a Kshatriya. Big controller. So big, he actually controlled the whole universe. Now, we can see people, or we can see in ourselves the desire to control simply when it comes to a life inside a Sankirtan van or, or something like that. But try to understand the feelings of control and possession that Bali Maharaj would feel when he ran the whole universe. Yet he lost it. In a moment. Lost it in a moment. I was just thinking like that. It's like I was asking for some tapes. They looked in the box here and one is missing. I said, oh, one tape is missing. What to do? Just one little tape. Of course it's a tape about Krishna, but still. Just see. One little tape missing. Now try to understand if you had, if you ran the whole universe, and all of a sudden, gone. if we can't find our dhoti, if we can't find our sweater or something, we're, you know, in a bit of anxiety. Of course, these things are used in Krishna's service, but still, there's some anxiety. Now just think if you got control of the whole universe like Bali Maharaj and then was taken away in a moment. And then Bali Maharaj, he was bound up by the ropes of Varuna. It's a special ropes. Painful. Bound up. Lord Vamanadeva ordered him, bind him up. He couldn't keep his promise. He's got no place for my third step. And Bali Maharaj thought, well, the Lord's covered the whole universe with two steps. He's got nowhere to put his third step. Well, the possessor of the wealth is more important than the wealth. So I'll tell him to put the third step on my head. Now he was thinking like that. I'm a big deal, so I'll tell Vamanadeva, put your third step on my head. In one sense, of course, that's the greatest fortune. But Vamanadeva, Lord Vamanadeva, still had some work to do on Bali Maharaj. So Bali Maharaj didn't keep his promise. No place for the third step. So he was bound by the ropes of Varuna. Painful condition. And then while he was bound up like that, his relatives, even his wife came and got on this case for a kshatriya. This is very embarrassing. It's worse than death to have your wife come and, you thought you controlled the whole universe. Now look at you. So, Prabhupada writes in the purports that you can't imagine, you can't conceive of this test that Bali Maharaj went through. But still, Krishna never tests you more than you can handle. In other words, just like a good teacher educates the student enough about everything before the test comes, Krishna does the same thing. There's no unfairness in Krishna consciousness. There's one person I was hearing about in Auckland. Oh, this is a female yoga teacher. So she's studying at the university. Big plans, how to have a big career as a physiotherapist. So came time for the final exam. And so, you know, some teachers, they'll give you the questions in advance because they figure that way you'll actually learn the material better if you know what the questions are and you have a chance to study before. And then you just go into the examination room and, you know, you can actually get into it more. Some teachers teach like that. Others like surprise questions. They never tell you what the questions are. You've had some teachers like that who'll give you the questions. It's common, right? So, all right, so this teacher, this is typical Kali Yuga, this teacher put the questions on the bulletin board, right, for all the students. And then one student came along and took the questions down for himself and, you know, here are the questions. Hey, you know, why do I have to care about anybody else? Yeah, you know, just grab them, you know, and go, you know, I got them. So you would think, well, big deal. All the students have to just call the teacher up, right? And say, you know, the questions on the board are missing, and naturally the teacher will, you know, give them a copy of the questions. No way. The teacher said, I'm sorry. I put the questions on the board. I mean, I've done my job. So this person, this female yoga teacher that Bhakti Sansa Swami and I know, was in complete anxiety, you know. Like, this is unfair. This is dishonest. This one guy got the questions, took them off the bulletin board. He's got all the questions, and the rest of the class doesn't have it, and the teacher won't even, you know, won't even give us the questions now. The teacher just says, hey, you know, I put them on the board. What do you want out of me, you know? First, it was a complete anxiety, you know. So Krishna doesn't do like that. Sometimes, I mean, we have to say, you're going to meet persons who have practiced a bit of Krishna consciousness, or practice much more than they are now, and they kind of have this attitude that Krishna has treated them unfairly. They don't say it like that, but that's actually what's underneath it all. It's never like that, though. Krishna gives you exactly what you need and gives you all instruction to pass the test that you need. Krishna is not like this teacher who put the questions on the board and then someone took them and refused to. So you can imagine, this one guy's got the questions, he's studying hard, he'll come out with the top mark, and everybody else, you know, they'll take the test just like it was surprise questions. And the teacher's attitude was, hey, don't, what are you bothering me about? You know, I've done my job. I put them on the bulletin board. I can't be responsible. What happens after that? Krishna is not like that. Part of devotional service is losing our mistrust of Krishna. If I engage in bhakti yoga, I'll be shafted in some way. I'll be minimized. The great me. Factually speaking, you cannot perform devotional service for long unless you learn how to become more humble than a blade of grass, more tolerant than a tree. Things always get a little rocky if you haven't learned that lesson. So we can never blame Krishna. We can only blame ourselves. So it is unfortunate. It's part of preaching in Kali Yuga that you have to deal with persons who want to blame Krishna, blame the process of bhakti yoga. No. If you want to go back to Godhead, do you think you will not get everything you need? Do you think Krishna is so small that even if there are problems, Krishna can't counteract the problems? Do you think Krishna is so small that even if there are organizational problems, Krishna can't counteract that so you can go back to Godhead? This is ridiculous. This is a big hospital, this Krishna consciousness movement. In a hospital, you're going to have good patients, bad patients. But you think Krishna is so small and limited that Krishna can't make up for any impediments that you experience in your career of trying to become healthy? We have to understand we're dealing with Krishna. And that is a great portion of our devotional service. Simply trying to wake up and understand we're dealing with Krishna. Then we'll start to be a little more tolerant and thick-skinned. Is it Clayton here was telling me how he never strained for anything, right? if it passed in front of his nose within a few centimeters, then he would, you know, he would nibble on it. Otherwise, there's a vow in the seventh canto of Bhagavatam, Ajagara Vritti. It's called the Python Existence. You know about this? It's a particular style that a sadhu can live, in which you just lay in one spot on the ground or stay in one spot and you only accept what comes to you. So there's a whole chapter in the seventh canto of the Bhagavatam spoken by the Python Man. And he speaks about how sometimes I get opulent foodstuffs, sometimes no food at all. Sometimes I get an opulent place to sleep, sometimes none at all, but whatever comes right in front of me, that's what I accept. I don't try for anything. So, some of us, we've come from backgrounds like that, not in the spiritual sense, though. What is one of the symptoms of Kali Yuga? Laziness. People are lazy even about their spiritual self-interest. This has infected everyone. We become lazy, even about trying to understand our best interests. So Krishna consciousness and laziness go very bad together. Because if the senses are not active for Krishna's pleasure, they'll become active for the pleasure of Maya. So there's always a battle. What to do with my senses? All right. Now that we have the chance to serve Krishna, let us take it very seriously with a little tolerance and austerity. Let's get the job done. Any other questions?
Central sanctan, it's very important to have a grasp on internal prayer. Could you explain a little more about development?
Yes, hear your rounds in the morning. If you're serious about Sankirtan, you'll chant 16 rounds in the morning without a break. You'll try to arrange your day that you can do that. And from the holy name, everything expands. Of course, not that you find some tent of sleepy campers and chant next to the tent. But that is the thing. Our internal prayer is the Hare Krishna mantra, mainly. Hear your rounds in the morning. Then you'll be able to remember when you go out on Sankirtan, I'm doing this for Krishna. And while doing the activity for Krishna, naturally you think, I've been appointed to do this task by Krishna. It's for his pleasure. You're always thinking like that. This is for Krishna's pleasure. I'm out here for Krishna's pleasure. So the first thing is to chant with attention in the morning. You guys are fortunate. You're brahmacharis or training to be brahmacharis. You don't have little babies screaming and yelling as soon as you wake up in the morning. All you have to do is get up, take a shower, and chant. And that chanting is the most important thing. Therefore, to sleep more than necessary is very deadly. Prabhupada explained that sleeping too much is like voidism. You want to void yourself out. You know what that means? Okay. You know what that means? Yeah. You want to annihilate yourself. You want to be dead. So you sleep. You think that's a solution, just to be out of it. It's the same reason people take intoxication. Krishna consciousness needs to be awake, always alert for opportunities to please Krishna. If you have nothing to do, sometimes it happens, you just can't figure out what to do next for Krishna, then just chant. You don't have to go to sleep. Just chant. You think that's bad? If you can't figure out what to do next. Some moments are like that. You just... doesn't seem to be any other service you can do or you're supposed to do. And so what to do? Oh, now's a chance to get some more rest. Just chant more. Chant more, read more. If you're falling asleep while you're chanting or reading, pace around a bit. As it gets warmer, it'll be a little harder. Try a little harder. So I want to thank you all for trying so hard this Christmas marathon. We have a lot of new persons, new bhaktas, and most of you, this may be your first Christmas marathon. I know that sometimes it's been a little tough, but I think you'll find at the end of the marathon that you'll find that if you try it a little bit, you'll find that Krishna will show you that he's pleased. It's not an easy thing to have so many new devotees doing the most wonderful service. And I think many of you may not understand the significance of what you've almost completed doing. Srila Prabhupada, as explained to Craig yesterday, Srila Prabhupada really loved this Christmas marathon when all the devotees from all over the world would try to make an extra effort to distribute his books. So you've all participated in that. Maybe you think, well, I just don't do that many books. What's the use? You don't know what your future will be. Maybe you do a little bit of books now, but next year, so many books. But anyway, Krishna is watching for the effort. So that so many new bhaktas have tried to distribute Prabhupada's books. That is extraordinary. That is very wonderful. Yes, there are inconveniences, and yes, you felt inconvenience. There's no doubt about that. Yes, you felt like not doing it. There's no doubt about that. But still you went ahead and tried. That is to your great credit, and Krishna will bless you for that. You'll find out what Krishna consciousness is about. It's not a club for lazy persons. It's a club for engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses. So I know that Clayton, Rufus, Craig, you're new. This is your first experience of December. So I know it hasn't all been, from the material point of view, a bed of roses. Is there something wrong with straining ourselves a little bit to please Krishna? Reminds me of one of Bhakti Siddhanta Swami's old sayings, no guts, no glory. And for New Zealand, this is certainly a monumental occasion. Never before has there been so much book distribution, and never before has so many new devotees gone out and tried to cast in their bit for Krishna's pleasure. So you all can be thankful you have this opportunity. Try to understand the significance of what you're doing. It's very profound. It's very deep. You participated in the Mahayagya, the great sacrifice. You've done something that gave and gives Srila Prabhupada so much pleasure. So we want to make sure you understand the context. This is not ordinary what you're doing. Some or other you got a chance to do the extraordinary. And yes, we know there have been inconveniences. Yes, we know. Probably if we asked you to choose what you wanted to do, you probably wouldn't have chosen this. It takes humility. And you've tried. Krishna will bless you with the ability to understand the books more because you've tried to give them to others. Just think, I've actually bent my back for someone other than myself. And my extended selfish interests. In this material world, we've bent our backs for maybe our family or our friends. But that's all extended selfishness. They're in relation to the body. Friendship and family means I do something for your body, you do something for my body. But you've actually bent your back a bit for Krishna, the original father. The fact is, how can there be spiritual advancement without training in sense control? So if you're looking just for a happy-go-lucky club where no one learns how to control their senses, ashram life is not for that. Such persons can still have something to do with Krishna consciousness, but they should do it at home. Ashram life means you learn sense control, discipline. Because it's the senses, the uncontrolled senses, that are causing us all the problems. And the mind is also a sense. An uncontrolled mind causes all the problems. So don't think it's just a foolish, silly thing, or unimportant thing, to learn how to discipline the senses. Control the mind. So some of us, we have to become a little more thick-skinned. Use the brain, understand what the enemy is. The enemy is uncontrolled senses. Use the brain, how to discipline your life, how to arrange your life so that you can control the senses and serve Krishna with great determination. Then, no matter what ashram you'll take up, it is a fact, not everybody remains brahmachari, it's quite obvious. Whatever ashram you take up, at least you'll be trained in how to control the senses. How to sacrifice for Krishna. Brahmachari life isn't just a happy-go-lucky, be-lazy life. And grihastha life isn't boy meets girl and just has romance life. Everything is based on sense control. Everything is based on discipline. And sometimes we don't like these things. We think the perfection of life is, I feel like doing something, so I do it. I don't feel like doing it, so I don't do it. And the more chances I get to act in that way, the better my life is. This is what we think, right? That's why Krishna, in chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita, immediately told Arjuna, you must tolerate. Nowhere in the Gita does Krishna say, Arjuna, I've got a magic pill for you. No. Even if you still feel these inconveniences, kindly tolerate them. Tolerance is the beginning of love. You'll only tolerate for someone that you have affection for. When we start to tolerate for Krishna, we start to become dear to Krishna. So let's do our best these last few days. And then, for New Year's, we can meet at the farm in Kaikur. Everyone can start to catch up on the hearing and chanting. And next year, the two Swamis, Bhakti Siddhanta Swami and Chandrasekhar Swami, they will be developing and implementing a study program so that everyone learns Prabhupada's books. You'll have a chance to become wise if you want that. So let us not forget that we're supposed to be training how to go back to Godhead, how to get out of this problematic material atmosphere. You got problems? Well, just realize it's because you have a body and because you're in the material atmosphere. Now do something about that. This is real intelligence. But they don't teach us that in university, do they? So we admit that there are problems. In Krishna consciousness, we admit there are problems. What are the problems? I have a body and I'm in a material atmosphere. Now how are you going to solve that problem? Alright, all glories to Srila Prabhupada. Yay. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva.